This episode is brought to you by Merrick Pet Care. And if you've heard me talk about Grammy, you know that she means the world to me. I wanted a dog for probably 10 years, and I was living in an apartment, couldn't have dogs. When I finally moved somewhere else, I adopted her within weeks, and it was love at first scritch. She's about 2 feet away from me as I record this. She hangs out in the studio, and all I want to do is smooch her and look at her and stare at her. I also like feeding her because I see how happy it makes her. And there's nothing like watching her lick her chops after having yummy stuff like Grammy's Paw Pie or Real Texas Beef and Sweet Potato, which are two recipes she's been enjoying from Merrick. As her parent, I like that they use deboned meat and fish or poultry as the number one ingredient. I also like that they have these real ingredients and you can see them on the bag so you know what's in each one. And watching her do a little dance, especially with a Grammy's Pot Pie recipe, brings too much joy to my heart. Is there such a thing as too much joy? I'm not sure. But check out Merrick online or in your local pet store and look for their new packaging with real ingredients shown on the bag and inside it.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE, SIPC.
Hey, hello, Ologites. So I put this in the show description, but I'm also adding it up top, just in case you're driving a car or you're working a forklift or you're feeding your chickens, or I don't know, if you listen on a high wire, you should not be reading text. But this is just a pre-roll linguistics alert. So in this episode, we talk about transgender healthcare and we touch on the history of the trans community in the US. And when I recorded this episode, in considering the inclusion of trans women, I opted for use of the term women's health and women, as gynecology is currently technically but antiquatedly defined. So I thought, okay, I'm making sure to include everyone who identifies as a woman. We are golden. Great. No. In so doing, I fucked up and I overlooked and excluded non-binary and trans men friends in that language. And I'm super, super, super sorry. I'm so sorry. Some really amazing and compassionate ologites alerted me to this. And I just want to say I'm so, so sorry that the language I used, like women, lady, lady machine, made anyone feel unseen. Please know that trans inclusion was totally on my mind, but I'm just super embarrassed to have missed the mark and overlooked the non-binary community and trans men community who also rely on gynecology for vital healthcare. I thought I had my bases covered and I didn't. I'm an idiot. So my ologites, each and every one of you, I see you, I love you, I care about you a bunch, and I will strive to do better when it comes to inclusionary language. As you know, I'm all about asking smart people dumb questions, and even when I think, okay, I got this, I'll do my best to just double check, triple check. So thank you for tipping me off to that, that I could have been more in the loop about gender versus Jennies, and for your patience with me and with each other, just as we all learn new things and we evolve into an even more inclusive and better linguistically equipped society. Now, if you don't encounter it often, it may seem like, well, what's the big deal? But I think these are some new and really exciting steps toward breaking down a lot of gender roles that hold all kinds of people back, from cis to trans to non-binary. Like, wearing pants was illegal for half the population until that was challenged and reframed. So if you're stoked that you don't have to drag a bustle on the subway or fit a petticoat into your Nissan Sentra, then we have some brave folks who said, this sucks and it's impractical to think. So likewise with gender and labels and the trans and non-binary community for undoing some super stark gender expectations and roles that don't really fit anyone completely. So thank you. I see you. Let's all be super kind and compassionate to each other and keep our minds open to learning new things, whether it's about snake butts or bee dancing or the origins of the universe or another person's perspective. So learning shit is cool. I stand by that. Okay, Gino, here we go.
Oh, hi. It's your guidance counselor, Allie Ward.
It's me. First things first, I think I have my contacts in the wrong eyes, but I'm just going to go for this. I'm going to change them later. Let's blaze through. OBGY not. Let's get into it. vaginas. Let's talk about them. Maybe you have one. Maybe you want one. Maybe you love them. Maybe you came straight out of one. They're everywhere. They're all around you. And they're pretty handy in terms of shooting out humans to continue the survival of our species. But how well do you know vaginas? How well do you really know them? It's kind of like when you've met someone a bunch of times at parties and you're like, oh my God, I love her. But you don't want to admit that, like, you've never had a real one-on-one. And, like, you don't even text each other. You've just hung out, like, a few times when people are drunk. So consider this episode just a deep-ass dive into the world of vaginas, birth, women's health, mental health, self-care, hygiene, all things that are happening in parts of your body that you only care about when they're causing you either great pleasure or great pain. So let's talk about gynecology. First off, before we celebrate crotch doctors, let's celebrate you. This engine of ologies runs totally on listener support. It's 100% indie. So your Patreon pledges keep it running from month to month. Thank you so, so much for doing it. Patrons also get in return to ask the ologists questions, and they get to walk around knowing that they're helping cocktail parties everywhere be way less vapid. So thanks to everyone who buys shirts and dad hats and pins and totes at ologiesmerch.com. You're totally helping too. But money's tight. I get that. You can also support so much by just subscribing and reviewing on iTunes, which is free. It takes 2 seconds. And I'm a creep and I read every review. And this week's warmed my heart so much. It confused my soul a little bit. TBH. Moni Walk says, just listened to the podcast on ichthyology, and I realized that Allie sounds very similar to Ellen DeGeneres. What could be better than listening to Dory tell you about fish? Do I sound like Ellen DeGeneres?
Yes, I am. That's me.
Okay. Back to gynecology. Now, before we dive into where babies come from, let's look at the birth of the word. So gynecology, it means a science that deals with the health and diseases of women. It comes from a Greek word, gyne, which comes from gwen, which has the same root, you ready for this, as queen. Gwen, queen, gyne. Boom. So just think, yes, her majesty, your royal vagina. So let's bow to your queens with a discussion with a gynecologist. Now, I had gone to Portland to record a few episodes, beer, bees, and now this interview with a medical doctor who grew up in the Philippines, South Africa, she grew up in Argentina, the Netherlands, all over. She's now based in Portland. She's been an OBGYN since 1997, and she's worked several medical missions in Ethiopia. She's a total badass. She spent an hour on a Saturday morning getting peppered with questions from me. Now, she arrived in my hotel lobby, I think a bit confused, I'm going to be honest. I think she was like, what am I getting myself into? And I have a dear high school friend, hi Paul, and he had put us in touch. And I think she's like, who is this redheaded chick in a 3-star Portland hotel? And why am I talking to her on a Saturday morning? And side note, I had booked it on Hotwire where they tell you, like, it's probably a Sheraton or like a Marriott. And you're like, okay. And then after you pay for it, they're like, psych, we gave you a creepy place that someone would stay if they're going through a divorce on a budget. So this amazingly brilliant doctor shows up, and on the way to my room, she offers that the place has a bit of a Motel 6 vibe. And I was gently mortified. I was like, girl, you are not wrong. Please forgive me. I have been foolishly catfished by Hotwire. Anyway, we got to my room, and she has the calmest bedside voice of anyone I have ever met. I imagine honed from literal decades coaching live human births. Like, if a screaming rotisserie chicken made out of my own blood were to work its way out of an orifice, I would want someone with her calm, intelligent disposition calling the fucking shots here. Likewise, like if I found a rash somewhere delicate or needed my holes probed by imaging equipment, her voice, her coolness, are goals. So she pulled up a chair and we chatted about what your gynecologist thinks of your bikini wax, unusual birthing strategies, self-care, and even like warning some super sobering statistics about assault, how you can help victims, how to wash yourself, how to touch yourself, all kinds of great stuff. So feel free to recommend this episode to anyone who's a woman or whose life has been affected by a woman, which is like all of us. So please scooch just a little farther down the table. Just a little more. Okay, that's too much. Okay. For gynecologist, Dr. Philippa Ribbink.
here's your microphone. That's yours. Okay. And we just talk into it. Dr. Ribbink.
Dr. Ribbink. Correct.
Was there a particular day where they're like, you can call yourself a doctor now?
After you graduate from medical school, the day you graduate, you can call yourself doctor.
Did you?
No.
No?
No.
Did it take a minute to like settle in to your identity?
Yeah, it took a while. I mean, I did in residency, I think from day one. Mm-hmm. So that was a month after I graduated. So it didn't take that long,
mm-hmm.
but yeah. It felt like I was acting in the beginning.
Really?
So I didn't feel like a real doctor for quite a while. It actually took probably several years before I stopped feeling like I was acting.
That's really common though in doctors, especially doctors with a lot of empathy, is that feeling of imposter syndrome.
It's very common. Yeah, it's very common. I'm not quite sure why, but I did a lot of acting in college, so it kind of like, I was okay with it, but I felt like I was acting.
Quick aside on imposter syndrome, because I feel like so many smart, capable people have it, including so many ologists that I meet. First, it's not a syndrome or a disease at all. It's just an experience identified by two psychologists, Dr. Pauline Clance and Dr. Suzanne Imes. Now, they observed that many intelligent, high-achieving people, especially women and people in ethnic minorities, tend to think that they are not intelligent. It's common across so many fields. People like Maya Angelou and Sheryl Sandberg, and even Tom Hanks being like, man, I do not belong here. I suck. So a lot of people with imposter syndrome don't know that other people worry that they don't belong in the high ranks that they've achieved. But admitting and talking about it tends to really help, if not solve the problem. So by the way, the opposite of this is called the Dunning-Kruger effect, when people of low ability think that they are the best, which can also happen in a lot of fields, such as, for example, politics. As for imposter syndrome, no matter if you're a doctor or a dancer, you may have felt like, do I belong here?
At what point did you kind of decide to nurture the medical side of your talents? If you're also doing arts and acting, like, was there a moment where you're like, I gotta choose?
I always wanted to be a doctor when I was a little kid. I had a heart operation when I was a little kid, and after that, I kind of felt like, well, I have to do this when I grow up. And my grandfather, who I was very close to, was also a doctor, so I kind of wanted to be like him.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought I was going to be a doctor, and then I went to college, and I discovered acting, and I loved acting, and then I thought, well, maybe I'll be an actress in New York City. And then I was waiting tables in New York City and kind of thinking, well, I don't really want to do this. And I was very good at science. So in my last year in college, I was like, I need to rethink this. I need to do what I'm good at, and applied to medical school, and I got in. And ever since that, I love medicine. It's the only job I can imagine doing. It's the only, I don't think there's a lot of jobs, except for maybe what you do, where you can really, you can hear stories, people's stories. You can listen, you can get really intimate details about people's lives. And a friend of mine said, you know, I don't read literature because I listen to patients all day long, and you can't make up this stuff. You can't make up this stuff. The degree of kind of the views in people's lives you get as a physician, maybe not all physicians, maybe not if you're a radiologist or a pathologist, but as an OBGYN or a family practitioner or an internist, it's amazing. I mean, it's an incredible privilege. You get to like listen to people's intimate details, and then you get to give them advice. I mean, it's you get to change people's lives, and there's very few jobs where you get to do that.
Do you think that there's something about psychology and stories that drew you to women's health in particular?
Probably. I mean, I've always found there's also just something about women's health that's just, it's so varied.
Mm-hmm.
What I do as an OBGYN is so varied. I'm a general OBGYN, so I get to deliver babies. I get to take people to the OR. I get to do C-sections. I get to do, I get to know people for 20 years. And that's not, you know, surgeons get to meet someone one day and take out a gallbladder and then never see them again. And I get to see people whose kids I've delivered, and then maybe I've taken out their ovarian cyst, or I've, you know, and I take care of their kids. I, you know, I saw yesterday, I saw a patient who's a, who was a Katrina refugee who had nothing when she came here. Now her kid's going to go to college.
Oh, I mean, it's like,
I get to see these stories, and I don't, you know, who gets to have that kind of inside view? You know, even as a journalist, you're like, you know, you get to hear a story and then you're in another town.
Yeah.
So you don't get that, you don't get to know people on that level.
Did you find that when you were first starting out, was that kind of intimacy, was that easy for you, or did that become more easy, more natural as you gained experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think it takes time to be comfortable with people telling you things that may be somewhat embarrassing and somewhat, you know, a little too much information, or a little bit like, oh my God, I work with you and you do that. That's interesting. but I think that, you know, it takes a while to ask the right questions as well. It takes a while to ask questions about people's sex lives. It takes a while to ask and to learn how to do it without judgment, and where people are actually comfortable and they're going to tell you details that are important for you to know. If you don't ask the question, you're not going to get the answer. You're not going to look for the, you're not going to be able to make the diagnosis. You know, there's people make silly choices sometimes when it comes to sex, and you don't find out that they've made those silly choices until you've actually asked the really specific question. Or they make silly choices when it comes to drugs or other things. And again, you don't, unless you're very specific and you learn how to ask questions very specifically without judgment. And that takes quite a while. I think that in the beginning, I wasn't that good at that.
Do you have to do a lot of guesswork with women's health? Are there any cases that you feel like really confuse both you and the patient? I feel like as a person with a vagina, and as someone who has friends with them, there's a lot of times women's health can absolutely confuse us and say, why does this hurt? Why is this happening? And do you find that sometimes diagnoses are difficult to make?
Yeah, I mean, probably pelvic pain is one of the hardest subjects for us all, because people come in with complaints of pain, and there's so many different things that can cause pain in the pelvis, because all these, you know, there's so many different organs in the pelvis and all the nerves travel together. So you can have, you know, you could have a hairline fracture in the tip of your, you know, in the tip of your femur, and that in your femoral head, and that could hurt. It could make you hurt kind of in the midline, as if you've got, you know, something wrong with your ovary. And so the pain, all these pain fibers travel together. I've had people with ectopic pregnancies on the left side and come in with intense pain on the right side.
Side note, ectopic means out of place, literally, and it refers to an egg, instead of implanting in the uterus, deciding to just like attach to your fallopian tubes or elsewhere. So this is like moving into a new house, but setting up your bedroom in the driveway. It's like, is here good? No, it's not. That's not good. And sadly, ectopic pregnancies usually do not have a good outcome. And they can be super dangerous for both the fetus and the mom. And they hurt a lot. Sometimes in the wrong spot.
It's hard to locate pain just by where people point, or people say it hurts on this side. And I've, you know, I remember taking a patient to the OR because she had intense pain on the left side, and she had a cyst on the left side, and she was postmenopausal, and she shouldn't have a cyst on the left ovary. And we took out her ovary, and she still had this pain on the left side. And then I kind of scratched my head and didn't know what to do with her, and send her to a friend of mine who's a fantastic physical therapist, who's also a really fantastic diagnostician, and who just kind of figured out that she had started playing the flute and was holding her body really funny.
What?
And was just contracting her left side of her body. And that's why she had this intense pain on the left side. So there's
oh my
all
God.
This, you know, people people hold their, you know, hold tension in their iliopsoas muscles.
Huh?
They hold tension in their levator ana muscles. So,
come again? Okay, those are both part of your pelvic floor, which is kind of like a trampoline of muscles holding your bowel and bladder and uterus in the right spots. So this basin of muscles, make sure your guts and gonads are well supported. Some of us don't even realize we've strained them, or don't even know we have them. We've never even thanked them once. If you're feeling bad about it, just do like a little Kegel squeeze right now, like a high five. Like, boop.
They'll hold tension in some of their muscles and it will feel like pain from their ovary. It will feel like pain from their uterus. And it's really referred pain.
Wow. I didn't even know that could happen. I can't imagine you're like, I played the flute. Let's get this ovary out of here. Like, who would have, that's not something you're going to find in a medical textbook. Like,
no.
Definitely.
A lot of it is just kind of, you know, I mean, sometimes you can get it out through the history, finding out what kind of work people do, whether they stand a lot. And sometimes people have, you know, a lot of women have had a history of sexual abuse. And a lot of times when you've been raped or you've been hurt, your body remembers the pain. Mm. And it manifests itself later on in life. So in various different ways. So,
having practiced now over 20 years, have you seen any attitudes toward women's health or being their own advocates for their health or their attitudes toward their own sexual relationships change at all over the last couple decades?
Unfortunately, I think women are still somewhat mystified by their body, more so than they need to be. I think there's a lot of information out there on the internet that's very helpful, but I don't know how many people are actually accessing it. There's an amazing website called Oh My God Yes about that basically talks about female sexuality.
Yes, I went to ohmygodyes.com. Okay, so this is a site that raises money for women's sexuality research by providing, in exchange, informative, beautifully shot instructional videos behind a paywall. I was like, do I pay $39 in the name of science to see what this is all about? And hell yeah, I used my business card and I did it. So let me just say, whoa, dude. Whoa. Okay. It's this gorgeously shot catacomb of videos you can go down about orgasmic tactics such as edging, layering, signaling, orbiting. And it's just right up in there. You see it all. Honestly, the most striking thing was like, whoa, I have never seen just like someone that you'd work in an office with talking or doing sexual things on camera like this. There's like no performative moaning. There's no painful looking high heels or weird coy eye contact with the camera. It's just women teaching women how to use their anatomy for pleasure. Men might be thinking like, you need a video for that? We don't need videos for that. Because our bodies are human factories with a lot of real complicated parts, most of sex ed that women get focuses on like mechanics, like periods, pads, tampons, ovulation, how to make sure a dude does not put a baby in us when we don't want one, etc., etc. As we learned about in the sexology episode, most women don't come through just vaginal stimulation, and no one really talks to us about that because for a quarter of our fertile lives, we are busy hemorrhaging from our crotch. And that just got dropped from the pamphlets they give out in middle school. They're like, oh, yeah, I guess you could come, I guess, if you figure it out.
I think it's kind of changed. I think the last year is very interesting to me because I think there's all these different, you know, maybe because of the Me Too movement, maybe because of reaction to the election, or there are many more TV shows that talk about female sexuality that very openly. So I think I kind of feel things are changing now, but I don't know. I mean, there's still, I see a lot of women with pain with sex. There's a lot of great information out there about that. Women are come in very, very mystified about it and are really not, they don't know how to access information on the internet and how to find the right sources. They come and they come in with a lot of shame. Or they hear things like, oh, just continue to have sex because it will get better. And they come in, by the time they come and see me, they've had pain for so long that their muscles are completely tense, and it will take ages for us to kind of reverse what's happened. I think things may be changing now, but in the 20 years I've been here, I haven't necessarily seen, you know, there are people that know how to access information and will, from either books or from the internet, and know how to take what's, you know, they know how to separate the bullshit from the true information. And there's also people that just get mired in the details and then really come in with some really kooky concepts. So,
do you find that people sometimes over Google before an appointment and they're like, I think I figured this out, and you're like, well,
yeah, people do. And again, sometimes people come in and they've Googled things and they've found some stuff that I've never heard of, and they educate me. Mm-hmm. There's also people that come in and they've just really gone down a rabbit hole, and they just are, it hasn't helped them. So again, I don't know what makes people good at finding information and what makes people bad at it, but I, you know.
Is there any book you think that every woman should read about her own health? Like, is this an Our Bodies, Ourselves kind of a thing? Is this should there be a textbook?
There should be. And I think Our Bodies, Ourselves is kind of outdated.
I know.
And The Joy of Sex is a kind of outdated. I mean, I think there's, I think there should be something the thing about female sexuality is that there's so, you know, it's finally being studied. It's finally being studied in a more kind of scientific way. I remember a textbook when I was in residency that talked about, it was a surgery textbook, and talked about treatment for vulvar cancer, and some vulvar cancers that are invasive and that are spread, the treatment is removing the entire vulva, including the clitoris.
Let's take a few quick secs for a quick rundown of the key players in a gynecologist's eye line. Now, when you say vagina, such as in, my vagina wants to text him, but my heart knows better, or, I'm sorry I stole your brownie, please do not kick me in the vagina, friend, what we're probably referring to, bum bum bum, you ready for this, is a vulva, which is such a moist sounding word. But I am a grown-ass woman, and I just learned 1 minute ago that the vagina is just the muscular canal. That's your baby chute. The vulva is everything else external, including the pubic mound, the labia majora, that's your burger bun, the labia minora, there's your lettuce, the clitoris, your pee hole, your vag opening, that's all your vulva. You've been calling it by its sister's name, vagina, all this time. But it's like, whatever, I'm used to it. So, as she was saying, in some cancers, if they spread, they remove all or part of the vulva.
This surgery textbook said that after that, some women will still achieve orgasm. And I read that, and I tried to find the reference for this.
Yeah.
And I could not find, there wasn't a reference for it. It was just a statement in the textbook, but it wasn't referenced. So I kind of thought, where on earth do they get this information? And I kind of know where this information comes from, because I've worked with those doctors, and they, you know, the patient comes in and says, is everything still fine with your husband? And the patient says, yes, it is. Mm. And hence the conclusion that women can still achieve orgasm, which is complete bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, I never found a reference for that statement.
If things are fine for your husband, they must be fine for you.
So I think that, you know, finally, there's people that are actually doing scientific research on female sexual pleasure, on female bodies. And I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. I think that's
astounding that it hasn't been, that it's such an afterthought. I mean, to women's health in general. I mean, I feel like the focus tends to be more on reproductive. I feel like we prioritize making more babies rather than having more orgasms, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all like, you know, who's telling the story, you know? I mean, it's just like, I think for ages, men have been telling the story. I think finally women are telling the story. Women directors are directing movies and telling stories. There's TV shows that are, you know, written by women, directed by women. And it's finally, women are telling the stories. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll get more, you know, science kind of being spent on issues that are important for women. I think we need more women telling stories. We need more women in science. We need more women asking questions.
Mm-hmm. So ladies.
Exactly. Exactly.
Did you gravitate toward gynecology because of your own interests in it necessarily? Were you kind of mystified by things and you thought, this, if I'm mystified and I like science, maybe other people are? Or did you like the idea of delivering babies? What was it?
I was a rape victim advocate in college, so I think that kind of made me interested in women's health. And then just in medical school, I mean, there were two fields I loved, psychiatry, but that happened to be because I did medical school in New York City, and the psychiatric hospital was Payne Whitney at Cornell, and it was just such a fantastic psychiatric hospital, and the psychiatrists were the smartest doctors I met, and it was just fascinating. And then the second field I really loved was OB. Mm-hmm. OBGYN, I just absolutely fell in love with it. I really had no experience with delivering babies before I started medical school. I just fell in love with the field.
I'm so sorry that happened to you, by the way.
I wasn't a rape victim. Oh. I was a rape victim advocate.
Oh my gosh, I thought you said I'm sorry.
I was a rape victim advocate.
Okay. So this is super embarrassing, but when she said rape victim advocate, I missed the advocate part of that sentence. So that was the most embarrassing and delicate conversational hiccup of my life. So thank you for witnessing it. I had never heard of a rape victim advocate, but Dr. Rabink explained.
I went to the ER to like be with rape victims. Oh, so they had a program that you could train to become a rape victim advocate, and you were on call. And if a rape victim went to the ER, you would go with them and sit with them basically during the interview.
How did you get involved with that?
I don't know. Someone, there was a flyer up in my college. I went to a women's college. I don't know.
That's dope.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing.
It was cool. It was good. A good thing to do.
In an ideal world, perpetrators of these violent crimes wouldn't do this. And we all know society has a long way to go in addressing our culture of violence. And unfortunately, I hear these stories from people I know a lot. Every woman seems to have had a sexual experience that should not have happened to her, or a near brush with one. And those stories are so common.
They're incredibly common. I mean, it's astonishing how many women have been sexually assaulted or raped. It just is astonishing.
And underreported as well.
Underreported. Yeah. I mean, we used to say 1 in 4. I think it's probably more 1 in 2.
Wow. God. I'm hoping that women will start some kind of tide of speaking up. I feel like this, even the last couple of months, it's been the first time that you really hear people speaking out about it, because the repercussions are they're so much sharper for women than they should be ever.
Yeah.
Than they should be for any other victim of anything else. So for more information on programs to help support victims, one resource is RAINN.org, RAINN.org. So check that out. So, all right, in college, she spent some time being on call for volunteer work. What about now? When it comes to being an OB, are you always on call?
No, I'm in a group. I could never always be on call. I know that OBs used to do that, and I think they had wives that would like take care of their personal needs and were somehow able to do it. I would never be able to pull that up. No, I work with a lovely group of physicians, and we cover each other. And our group was actually, the founders of my group really felt that in order for us to be good physicians, we had to take care of ourselves. We couldn't take care of other people if we didn't take care of ourselves. So we, from the very beginning that we never took call for ourselves 24/7. We always covered each other so that if You had a dinner date, you could go to your dinner date. You didn't have to cancel your dinner date just because someone was in labor. And patients, you know, RRB patients hear that from the, you know, the day they come in the door. You know, I work in a group. We cover each other for call. Whoever's on call is going to do your delivery. It may be me. It may be one of my wonderful partners. And, you know, if that's not okay with you, then you need to find a different physician.
And when you say taking care of yourself is, of course, that makes you a better doctor. I think that's so interesting, especially when it comes to women's health. We don't take care of ourselves. What are the basic tenets of, like, making sure that you're not ragged and that it's not affecting your body? I'm asking this for selfish reasons because I'm always ragged.
Get enough sleep when you can. Don't drink too much alcohol. Have friends. Do things with your friends. Have family. Do things with your family. Go on vacation. You know, do things that have nothing to do with medicine. Go to the movies, read a book, learn a new language, do other things, and exercise. We all, like everyone in my group, has an exercise routine, and we stick with it religiously. It's so important. And eat healthy. I mean, those are kind of, I mean, they're basic things that everyone should do. Mm-hmm. Don't eat junk food.
What's your exercise routine?
I go to yoga twice a week, and then I do this bizarre exercise called gyrotonics, and I take a private lesson with this Russian ballerina who tortures me, who says, I'm Russian. I had to do this when I was a kid, and you have to do this.
What is it? Does it involve a gyroscope?
No, it's kind of like Pilates, but it's more three-dimensional than Pilates. It's an amazing core muscle exercise routine. A lot of what I do is bending over and holding my body in funny positions when I'm waiting for someone to deliver or...
Okay, I looked this up and it's not gyrotonics. It's technically gyrotonic followed by an R in a circle, like a registered trademark. Gwyneth, Madonna, they're both into it. And videos I watched feature these super ripped Swan Lake types stretching cables around with such elegance. They look like alive puppets doing this slow, sweeping modern dance performance. It's also expensive, but there are Groupons if you're thirsty for abs.
You're a gyro-gyno.
I'm a gyro-gyno. I'm not, like, there's actually three gyro-gynos in my group.
Y'all go.
We're the gyro-gyno group. We actually thought about having a group retreat and doing a gyrotonics class.
You guys need t-shirts, man.
I know we do. And I run and I walk. So
you make sure to get some exercise.
Yeah.
I think we need a women's health Bible, and that should be chapter one. And then the rest of things like, what the hell is a cervix?
Yeah.
Okay, so cervix means neck, and it's the lower part of the uterus that serves as an opening to your vagina. Now, I tried to find a fun fact about a cervix that you would like, and it might be uncomfortable, so I'm just going to sing it fast in case it's uncomfy, so you can just tune out the words and groove to the music if you need to, okay? So your cervix has glands that make mucus, and you can monitor it to figure out how fertile you are, and it's thicker and acidic when you're less likely to get knocked up, but it's stretchy and clear like an egg white when you have more estrogen and might be ovulating, and that aspect of being stretchy, like for instance in mucus, has a name, and the internet says it's pronounced like this.
Spinbarkeite.
I'm sorry I did that to you. And also, there's nothing less sexy than a robot describing your cervical mucus. Okay, let's change the subject.
This is a dumb question, but when people are going to the gynecologist and they're like, oh my God, do I need to get a bikini wax? Does any of that really matter? Because I feel like there's so many women I talk to who are like, oh man, I'm rocking this bush. Oh, this is embarrassing. Does the gynecologist ever really care?
Actually, I actually tell everyone don't shave.
Oh, okay.
Because hair is there for a reason. So where I mean, if you talk to all the vulvar specialists in the country, everyone's like, don't shave.
Really?
Yeah.
It's so cool that out there right now, there are vulvar specialists, like real ones, and not dudes on spring break wearing shirts proclaiming that they're vulvar specialists. They're not.
I mean, I see people come in with like nasty folliculitis because they've shaved or they've waxed or whatever, and I'm always like, you know, I also think the shaving has kind of made people so much more aware with what their vulva looks like and their labia. Mm-hmm. And like, there's like so many people that think their labia are too long and that they need to be reduced or cut off. And I think part of that's because everyone's shaving. Mm. And so you can see them more. And there are so many different normal shapes of vulvas, and the range is amazing. And I think people have this like idea of what that needs to look like. Mm-hmm. That's really artificial. So there's all the plastic surgery that people are doing on their vulva. I think part of it is the result of, part of it is the result of internet porn. Part of it is the result of everyone shaving and thinking that this is kind of what it needs to look like. Mm-hmm. And there really isn't a specific way that it needs to look like.
That was one of my questions, is I was going to ask if you've seen in your practice, like, if labioplasty has become more and more popular as we have more access to images that maybe are
It has. I mean, it was started by two hippies, so we've got a little more hippy dippy practice. Mm-hmm. Although the two hippies have since moved on, and I do not like the Grateful Dead, so it's actually one of my interview questions.
That's so specific. Did you lie and say like, yeah?
No, I said no.
Oh, okay.
I grew up with the Sex Pistols, not the Grateful Dead.
Oh my God.
So,
perhaps as a future gynecologist, she was influenced by the Sex Pistols' seminal album, Never Mind the Bullocks. Bullocks mean testicles in British slang. Back to trimming your labia.
So not so much in my practice. I haven't, you know, I occasionally have done labioplasties, especially in cases where like one labia is way longer than the other. Mm-hmm. Or when they're so long that they're really rubbing and it's really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Or when they're athletes and it just is a problem. So I've done labioplasties in those cases. I don't get that many requests for just purely cosmetic labioplasties. But I know physicians that are practicing elsewhere that are, you know, that's a big bulk of their practice. Mm. And they're, you know, I know in New York, there's a specialist in maternal fetal medicine, high risk obstetrics, that left his specialty and all he does is labioplasties. And he advertises on the internet the before and after picture and has all these stories from women that always felt horrible and felt that they were ugly and now they feel so much better. And to me, it's just like, there is no normal, mm-hmm. You know, let's talk about what's normal. Let's talk about the range of what the vulva needs to look like. And I think the only thing that makes me really hopeful is that we're starting to see more women's bodies that are slightly different in advertising. We're starting to see women's bodies on TV that are not the perfect model that whoever decided was the perfect model. Mm-hmm. I'm hopeful that we're finally going to have some more that women are finally going to learn how to accept their body the way it is.
Right.
Because I think that's what it's about.
I guess, and being an advocate for your own health is accepting your body as fine as it is. I think women women do tend to have a bit of an antagonistic relationship with their body because of perfection standards. I mean, I feel like every woman I know has something that they're...
No one likes their own boobs.
Yeah.
It's like...
Really?
It seems like very few people really find that their breasts are... They're either too big, they're too small. There's no better lesson you could learn your teach your daughter than love your body the way it is.
It's a lot cheaper also.
Yeah. It is. It's a lot cheaper than plastic surgery.
Okay. Let's pivot to have some IUD chat. Intrauterine devices, IUDs, they can last 3 to 6 years and be super effective in preventing pregnancy. So they interfere with sperm motility, they booby trap your cervical mucus to make fertilization harder, and in some cases, they poke your uterus to make you think you're already preggers so that an egg won't implant. So that's very lay women's terms. They also can deliver hormones, they can help with heavy periods like the Mirena IUD.
You know, some people don't tolerate the Mirena IUD.
I was going to ask about IUDs, how much more common they're becoming and if they're pretty painful, if someone's considering one.
It depends on where you are. I mean, on the coasts, I think they're a lot more painful. Right before the election, I think I was putting in 2 IUDs a day.
Really?
Because people were afraid they were going to use contraceptive benefits and they, you know, an IUD lasts 5 years or 10 years, depending on what kind of IUD you have. We've always put in a lot of IUDs. I once did a review for a legal case from somewhere in the Midwest, and the patient was never offered an IUD and she presented with heavy bleeding. One of the first things we would do in someone who presented with heavy bleeding would be to offer them a Mirin IUD because it reduces menstrual blood loss. And it's so effective that I worry about my residents getting enough experience doing hysterectomies because we don't do that many hysterectomies anymore.
Oh, wow.
We use the IUD.
When it comes to ovarian reserve and eggs, I feel like I know a lot of people who are waiting a little bit longer to have children. Maybe they're in their mid-30s, late 30s, before they're considering starting a family. Maybe this is a stupid question, maybe it's not. If you've been on birth control preventing ovulation for a number of years, does that mean that you have more eggs or not?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it's good to be on the birth control pill for many years because it decreases the chance of you developing endometriosis. Mm-hmm. So it suppresses endometriosis. So it preserves fertility in that way. It doesn't preserve fertility in terms of ovarian reserve. It's not that you don't have eggs. It's just that your ovaries become more unresponsive. Mm. So it's not just the number of eggs you have left. It's more just the responsiveness of your ovary.
Do you recommend women who are waiting to have a family? Is there a time when you're like, get these puppies on ice?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, our college, the American College of OBGYNs, just sent out a whole, I think it was last year, that they sent out a questionnaire where they asked all of us up to what extent we offer our women, our patients that are in their early 30s, up to what extent we talk about fertility preservation with these patients. And it's interesting because I think that what came out is that most of us, if we had a patient who presented with cancer and was going to get whole body radiation that was potentially going to destroy their ovaries, we would talk to them about preserving their eggs. And we don't necessarily do that in our patients that are 32, that are getting their second PhD and waiting to have kids because of that reason. And we should. I mean, ever since that study, I have been asking people, what are your plans in terms of kids? Is this something you want, something you don't want? I'm not, you know, occasionally I've talked to people about preserving their eggs. The tricky thing in Oregon is that it's not covered under insurance. Mm. So it's pricey.
Yeah.
You know, it costs a fair amount of money. And, you know, people that are students don't necessarily have an extra $10,000 to $20,000 laying around to do that.
Yeah, no.
So that's the problem. I don't think people are quite aware of how much infertility is caused by age.
So 20 or so years ago, the American Fertility Society wanted to launch an ad, very well-meaning, on buses that said, hey, ladies, start your families before you turn into a wizened crone. I'm paraphrasing.
You know, they showed the ads to groups of women and everyone just was completely offended.
Right.
You know, it's hard to, how do you tell women, you know, your clock is ticking without telling women, go make a baby.
Exactly.
You know, it's hard.
Yeah,
it's hard. And the ovarian, you know, the oocyte freezing has, you know, we used to not be that good at freezing just unfertilized oocytes. And now we've become much, much better at it. So it's an option. It's a viable option now for those that can afford it.
Mm-hmm. But early 30s is the time to think about it, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember
late 20s, early 30s.
I remember someone mentioning it to me when I was 34, and I was like, how dare you? And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I see what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just fertility starts plummeting in our late 30s. And different, you know, we're all a different curve. Some women, you know, I've had a patient conceive with IVF with her own eggs at 45, and But that's the exception to the rule.
Right. There's always someone that's like, I don't know, my cousin found out on accident she was pregnant at 48. And yeah. So anything's possible. And you're like, okay, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
Good to know. Okay, I have some rapid fire questions.
Okay.
From listeners. But before we take questions from you, our beloved listeners, we're going to take a quick break for sponsors of the show. Sponsors? Why sponsors? You know what they do? They help us give money to different charities every week. So if you want to know where Ologies gives our money, you can go to alieward.com and look for the tab Ologies Gives Back. There's like 150 different charities that we've given to already, with more every single week. So if you need a place to go donate a little bit of money, but you're not sure where to go, those are all picked by ologists who work in those fields. And this ad break allows us to give a ton of money to them. So thanks for listening and thanks, sponsors. This podcast and my life is brought to you by Squarespace. Do you know that I didn't have a website for forever because I was putting it off because I was scared? And then I heard another podcast talk about Squarespace. I was like, I'm going to give it a shot. I had a website up that day. They have beautiful templates. They host. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Look at me. Even I did it. You can sell products. You can sell your time. They have this guided design system. It's called Squarespace Blueprint. You can select from a layout. There are styling options. You can get your website discovered with these integrated, optimized SEO tools so people find you when they Google. They also have easy to use payment tools, so checkout, very easy for customers, which is what you want. There's also Squarespace AI, which can help you explain what your site is about. You can choose your tone. Whether you're a scientist who wants to share your work with the world, whether you are starting up a business selling tiny paintings of tiny books, or a choreographer selling dance classes, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/ologies to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. I recommend it to all my friends, even when I'm not recording an ad. Okay. Oh, KiwiCo. We love you. Kids love you. Parents love you. Uncle Allie's love you. Here's the deal. So whether you're staying at home or you're heading out on some summer explorations, KiwiCo is inviting kids, also kids at heart, that's you, to enjoy their first ever summer adventure series. So kids from 2 years old to teens can receive 6 hands-on science and art project kits over 6 weeks. They have something for everyone. They have different topics for each age, whether your kid wants to explore space or learn about dinosaurs. And I've heard from my parental friends that summer can be a little challenging to keep the kiddos busy. KiwiCo's like, we did the legwork for you. And the summer adventure series is this personalized experience with super fun activities like a bottle rocket kit where kids can build an actual bottle rocket. And you can either receive all of your summer adventure crates at once or weekly for 6 weeks. I think it's so amazing that they have different crates for different ages, everything from the great outdoors that has like giant bubbles or a window garden to a trebuchet kit for ages 9 to 14, an entrepreneur where you can do textured clay projects. If you have kids, if you know kids, keep them occupied and learning and having fun this summer with KiwiCo. And you can get 20% off your summer adventure series at kiwico.com/ologiessummer. That's 20% off your summer adventure at kiwico.com/ologiessummer. Oh, have fun. Oh, it's heating up. It's time to say bye now to your jackets and your sweaters and your tights and get reacquainted with shorts and tees, breezy things. Can I point you to the direction of Quince? What I love about Quince, you can build a lineup of timeless pieces that keep you looking effortlessly chic year after year without spending a fortune. They have premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts. They start at $30. They have washable silk tops. And I love that all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands because they partner directly with top factories. They cut out the cost of the middleman and then they pass the savings on to you. So whether you need a sundress you can wear to a picnic or you need some good t-shirts or tanks that feel nice on your skin and are well made, head over to Quince. I love them so much I put them on my body. That's what clothes are for. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ologies for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ologies to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ologies. Oh, hi, it's me, the lady that checks a bunch of scholarly articles before she believes anything, Allie Ward. And I feel like we are similar in that we have a fair amount of skepticism and we like to dive deep and find out what the actual facts are. This is why when it comes to any kind of supplements, I enjoy Ritual, which is a female-founded B Corp, meaning that they're holding themselves accountable to not just the company, but also to the health of people in our planet. And their clinically backed Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin has these high-quality, traceable key ingredients in bioavailable forms that are clean. Only about 1% of supplement brands are USP verified, and Ritual is one of them. So I like being able to trust what I'm putting in my body. From an aesthetic standpoint, I'll also tell you that Ritual are beautiful little vitamins. They look like lava lamps and they taste like mint. So taking my Ritual is part of my, I guess, morning ritual. That's probably why they named it that and I didn't even think about it. Anyway, no more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. So get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/ologies. You can start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/ologies for 25% off. Down the hatch. Okay, your questions. Carrie Stewart wants to know,
what are OBGYNs doing to reduce the maternal mortality rate in the U.S.? And during a woman's pregnancy, how do OBs balance the mom's health with the baby's health?
Well, in California, they took kind of control of the issue and they started investigating every maternal death. And they came up with some really great algorithms and kind of protocols and approaches and on how to address postpartum hemorrhage, on how to recognize women at risk for preeclamptic seizures. California maternal mortality rates have gone down ever since they started these investigating maternal deaths. Texas maternal mortality rates have gone up. So I think it's a state by state response. It has to do with access to care.
Texas maternal mortality rates are 5 times that of California. They're 10 times that of some other developed nations. So access to good medical care as prevention holds true on a global scale as well, staggeringly. 99% of global maternal mortality happens in developing countries. For me, as a non-mom, I had kind of taken for granted the danger of childbirth. I mean, it's such a natural process. And on top of that, we have phones that can scan our faces now and talking robots and soap and missions to Mars. I had thought like, oh, we've totally kicked childbirth risk. I had no idea that the statistics were still going up in some parts of the country.
You know, in obstetrics, most things go fine most of the time. And occasionally things don't go fine. And when they don't go fine, they go south real quickly. Mm. And it takes a certain volume to recognize, oh, things are going south. There's also, you know, a whole kind of change in culture. And for instance, in our hospital, the way we've empowered our nurses to speak up so that if there's one person in the room that's not comfortable with what's happening, we have certain words on how to say, stop. I think we need to change this tactic. I'm uncomfortable with what's happening here. And this is what I want to see happen. And everyone in the room has a right to speak up. And by empowering our nurses, we've also changed things. We're moving away from this model that the physician knows everything and is the captain of the ship. We're moving more to a team approach to medicine. And it's a much better approach. It's a much safer approach.
Is it more natural to squat and have a baby than it is to lie down and have a baby?
It is. But, you know, most of us don't have enough core muscle strength to actually do that. Oh. I mean, I've only had a couple of patients in my career that could actually hold their body up in a squat and push out a baby.
One need was a gyro.
One was, exactly. One was this like iron, she was like competed in the Ironman and she was completely like superwoman. She was able to.
She's just trail running.
She was squats. Just like squat and was
have
able
a baby.
To like
keep running.
Push this baby out squatting. Most of us just don't have enough core muscle strength. I mean, it's different. We sit in chairs, we sit at desks and I've done some work in Ethiopia and Ethiopian women can actually squat and push a baby out because they don't sit on chairs. They sit on the floor. They work in the field all day long. They have good core muscle strength. We just don't have enough good core muscle strength to do that. Most
good
of us.
Good to know. I won't be squatting one out anytime soon, but okay. I should work on my core. Sidebar, I started looking up chairs that are like really fancy balancing ones, and some were like $700, which seems like a really gross way to mimic just not having a chair. So then I found an article that said one thing you can do is just sit on the floor more. It's free and it has health benefits like improved posture. It strengthens your core. And according to this article, it also keeps you humble. And it's like, dude, it's Saturday night. I'm Googling, why am I a slob with atrophied abs? That I got that last one covered.
Rebecca Hall wants to know, when you say you've seen everything before, do you actually mean that, or are you just saying that to make us feel better? When you're like, oh man, I've seen everything, don't worry about it. Or do you just say that?
I don't think I've ever say I've seen everything before. I've seen a lot, but I don't think I'll ever have seen everything. I never cease to be amazed with what I see. Life is messy. Life is just messy. We're all messy. We all are like, make silly mistakes. I don't know. I really don't have a lot of judgment when it comes to people's behavior. Initially I think I was practicing non-judgment, but eventually I just like, it's like, you know, there's so many different ways of living and there's so many different ways of being.
Which is funny, that leads to the follow-up question. Katie Grant wants to know, what's the most unexpected thing you have ever retrieved from a vagina? And I don't know if you can answer that. Set of car keys, a muffin.
I think a cross.
A cross.
Yeah, in residency.
Oh. I hope it was ironic.
No.
Mm. Ouch.
Yeah.
That is not ergonomic at all.
Yeah.
Oy. Colette Ayers wants to know, why am I so irregular despite having every single form of test all coming out normal, including the one with the long stick covered in a giant condom? I think she's talking about a transvaginal ultrasound.
Yeah.
Are there negative effects on the body when periods are not regular? Or are there certain chemicals your body produces during menstruation that if you're irregular, your body misses out on? She asks, is contraption a good way to regulate your period? I believe she means contraception. And that was probably autocorrect, but contraption. Maybe there is a contraption. Uterine cage.
Yeah, I don't know.
What are you, irregular periods? What's happening here?
It is normal for the period to vary from anywhere from, you know, every 24 days to every 36 days. That's normal. That's still considered regular.
Okay.
So I, you know, some women consider that irregular, you know. And some women are blessed with having a period every 28 days, even when they're not on the birth control pill. Most women have slightly irregular periods.
Quick knowledge drop about your red devil, your crimson tide, your leak week, etc. So menses comes from the Latin word for moon, because duh, both are 28 days. So of course the moon is a hollow orb that houses a period gremlin who controls us, naturally. But fact check this, several scientific studies have shown there's no correlation between moon phases and menses. It's a dang mystery. And to repeat the doc, most women have slightly irregular periods anyway. So the moon is not a conspirator in your ruined beach plans.
Skipping periods altogether probably means she's not ovulating on a regular basis. And sometimes that's because you have polycystic ovarian syndrome. And sometimes it's just you have oligoanovulation. You're just not ovulating on a regular basis. And you just skip a period once in a while. If you have really long intervals between periods and you don't, you know, you menstruate once every 6 months or so, the risk of that is that you're still making estrogen. The estrogen is stimulating the lining of the uterus. You're not breaking down that lining of the uterus. And so you can get an overgrowth of the lining of the uterus, or you can get worse, a cancer of the lining of the uterus if you're still making estrogen and you don't have progesterone to kind of break down that lining once in a while. We usually say you should have at least 4 periods a year. Mm-hmm. So if you're not having 4 periods a year, you should take progesterone to make yourself have a period 4 times a year. It's a little bit of an arbitrary number. I don't think any of us have ever studied that's
the right number, right?
The right number, and that's what's going to protect the lining of the uterus. I think if your periods are really, really heavy, Are you having a lot of bleeding in between your periods? You need to get the lining of your uterus evaluated. And even if you've done it 2 years ago, you may need to do it again. Because I've had patients develop endometrial cancer that I've biopsied every 2 years. And every time that lining was negative. And lo and behold, now it's positive. Mm. And they've got endometrial cancer. So if you continue to have what we would call unopposed estrogen, so estrogen to the lining of the uterus and no progesterone to kind of break down that lining of the uterus, then you need to have the lining of your uterus evaluated. If, on the other hand, you're having irregular periods because you're going into premature ovarian failure and you don't have a lot of estrogen around, that's, and you just once in a while still kick out and recruit a follicle and ovulate, then that's not as concerning.
So irregular periods could be nothing, or they could be a sign that your lady machine is about to retire from the game early, even when you thought you had a few innings left to play. Also, buckle up for a fun fact about how low FSH, or follicle stimulating hormone, can be an indicator of good ovarian health. And some TMI about old Ward's gonads. I feel very vulnerable right now.
It depends on, you know, are you still making estrogen? Are your estrogen levels normal? Is your FSH normal, which is your follicular stimulating hormone, which is the hormone your brain makes to tell your ovaries make estrogen. Mm-hmm. And as long as your follicular stimulating hormone is less than 10, you're still making estrogen.
But you've got to get that checked on a certain day too, right? No.
Yes and no, but okay. You could, you know, it if it's less than 10 on a random day, you're in good shape.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mine was 135 last it was checked. But
you have premature ovarian failure.
Sure, yeah. Do. But yeah. Started happening to me in my mid-30s, uh-huh. And I just was like, oh, I travel a lot. It's irregular, and then
yeah.
They didn't figure it out until it was, but when it came back, they were like, there's a chart and you're off of it. And I was like, oh, good to know.
Yeah,
but yeah, yeah, I didn't even think that that was a thing. I think we kind of also do get fed, like, as a career woman, like, don't let anyone tell you that you're losing fertility. You know what I mean? It's almost like a badge. It's fine. It's fine. Like, I'm an aunt. I'll get a dog. Probably babies seem like a lot of work anyway. It's fine. I am fine. See, Mads wants to know, how scary are pap tests and OBGYN appointments, etc.? She's like, I'm a young adult with a verguba. I think she means a vagina. I mean, I think that's adorable.
So many different words for vagina.
I know. She's terrified of getting her bits checked out. So how scary are they? She wants to know.
Well, first of all, we don't do pap smears until people are 21. So,
okay.
If she's been sexually active, it depends a little bit on whether you've been sexually active before. If she's never been sexually active, she doesn't actually need a pap smear. If she's been sexually active, if she's used tampons before, it really shouldn't be, it shouldn't be uncomfortable. And how scary it is depends a little bit on how comfortable she is with the physician. If she's uncomfortable with the physician, don't have them do a pap smear.
And nowadays, they always have a nurse in the room as well, right? That's fairly new?
There should be someone else in the room, whether it's a nurse or a medical assistant or a scribe, yeah.
It's always just a matter of, you just got to keep scooching. You think you're scooched to the edge of the table, and then they're like, can you scooch more? And you're like, really? And you scooch, and they're like, just a little more. And you're like, damn, I got to hang my butt off this thing for real.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Keep scooching. Lily Moss has a good question. Is there an equivalent of a gyno for trans women? Is it same doctors for cis women, or is it a fairly new job thing that specializes in trans women's health?
I see some trans women, but not that many. I actually see more trans men than I see trans women, interestingly enough. Most trans women, in terms of, will have their vagina built by someone who specializes in surgery. That's a very specific surgery. It tends to be people that are plastic surgeons. Sometimes it's urologists. There's different groups in the country that are known for their surgery. Some of our trans women patients will go to Thailand because the surgery is a lot more affordable there.
Oh, wow.
Marcy Bowers is a herself a trans woman. She used to be an OBGYN. She specializes in gender reassignment surgery, and she's located in the Bay Area. She used to be in a little town in Colorado.
So the town of Trinidad, Colorado, became known as a hub for gender reassignment surgery when this local surgeon, Dr. Stanley Biber, had come back from being a medic in the Korean War. And he was asked by a patient about the possibility for this procedure. And he was kind of stumped. He was like, I don't know how to do that. So he wrote to some colleagues at Johns Hopkins in Stanford. They sent some plans, like some sketches. Yeah, that's how we did it a couple times this way. And so in the late 1960s, he got really good at it. So this doctor in Colorado started practicing gender reassignment surgeries, and trans folks started moving to Trinidad, Colorado, because his medical care was the best. So this doc kind of passed the torch to Dr. Marcy Bowers. But when she left for San Francisco, Trinidad, Colorado became kind of a bit of a ghost town. The mayor himself called it an abyss of nothingness. But recently, they turned an abandoned Pepsi plant into a pot dispensary, and business in Trinidad is on the rise. So for several decades, Trinidad, Colorado served as this kind of beautiful, rare gem in the middle of the Wild West. But care for trans patients is now becoming a little more widespread.
So there's a couple of centers. San Francisco has a Center for Excellence in Transgender Health. OHSU has a Center for Excellence in Transgender Health. And these centers kind of specialize in gender reassignment surgery, and those tend to be the places where people go.
Krista Trexler wants to know, how many babies have you delivered, and what's the longest you've ever seen a woman be in labor for?
I don't actually. I didn't keep track of how many babies I've delivered. I probably delivered over 3,000 babies.
Oh, but my God.
I didn't actually count them all.
That's so many babies.
just based on how many years I've been in practice.
What's the biggest one? My sister had a 10.5-pound baby. It was like a turkey.
I helped. I kind of was supervising a midwife who delivered a 13-pound baby.
Oh, what?
That's like two babies.
Yeah. The biggest one I've delivered, I think, was also close to 13 pounds, but that was a C-section.
Oh, man.
We knew that baby was going to be big, so we just felt like it wasn't going to be safe.
Yeah. So. Yeah, let's get out the sunroof there.
Yeah.
Oy vey.
Quick question. Why are some babies giant? So doctors don't call them giant babies, but rather LGA, which stands for large for gestational age. Any baby over 8 pounds, 13 ounces is diagnosed with fetal macrosomia, which literally means baby, big body. And genetics can play a part, totally, as can things like maternal diabetes, which kind of messes with your insulin levels. But sometimes you just don't know. And my niece is now a lanky 12-year-old. She's almost taller than me, but she will always be our beloved LGA, fetal macrosomic giant turkey baby.
What's the longest you've ever seen someone in labor for?
Oh, it can be it can be days. Like real active hard labor, probably 2 to 3 days.
Ugh.
But
what's the percentage of people that get epidurals? Because that would be like anesthetize me from the neck down. Wake me up when this thing's over.
It's about 70% to 80%.
Yeah. Is there any risk to them?
If you get an epidural very early in labor before you're in active labor, it may slow down your labor because it's when you first get into active labor, it's probably a good idea to walk around because kids have big heads compared to our pelvis. And in order for the head to kind of fit down the pelvis, it needs to kind of rotate to find a way to pass through the pelvis. Humans, when they evolved from being a four-legged mammal to becoming bipedal, changed the structure of their pelvis. And so their pelvis got a little smaller. In the meantime, heads got bigger.
Mm. Listen to episode 2 on primatology if you want more details on our shitty head to pelvis situation.
And so, hence, when the baby actually descends and leaves the body, it actually goes through these rotations to make its way through the pelvis. And those rotations work way better if you're actually walking.
Oh.
So that if you can walk for a part of active labor, your kid's more likely to descend. Ooh. And your labor's going to be a little bit faster.
Okay. Good. Now get on that treadmill.
Yeah.
Ugh. Do some breathing exercises.
Yeah.
Yikes.
I mean, I've had people that wanted all natural deliveries and labored for 24 hours and were absolutely exhausted and their muscles are tense and they're just not going anywhere in a hurry, and the epidural just allows all their muscles to relax, and the baby descends, and boom, they can deliver their baby.
And they're done.
At Emmanuel, we get a lot of transfers from home deliveries, and about half of those women still deliver vaginally. And these are women that the midwife has brought in that they thought could not deliver vaginally, and all they needed was some pain control and a little bit of sleep, and they still have a vaginal delivery.
Get that puppy out of there. Do you have anything about your job that you hate, that just sucks, or that is difficult?
You know, occasionally the sleep deprivation gets to me.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's sometimes really tough to... typically if it's a delivery, I can rally.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a kind of a silly phone call, or sometimes it's stuff like, you know, some hospital wants to transfer a patient, and that kind of stuff irritates me. And it's like, you guys can take care of this. Why are you calling me at 2 a.m. about this? Or an ER, one of my patients has gotten an ER somewhere, and the ER physician wants to just let me know that they've seen the patient. And I'm like, so happy you're calling me at 3 to let me know that you've seen the patient and taken care of this patient. And you've just woken me up. I'm so happy about this.
Can you get back to sleep easily or no?
If I get irritated, no. It's hard to get back to sleep. If it's a silly thing, then I get irritated and then it's hard to get back to sleep. But, you know.
What's your favorite thing about what you do?
I think it's still delivering babies. It's just such a beautiful thing. I never thought I would like that this would be the thing. I always thought eventually I'd stop doing OB and I'd just do GYN and have an easier life. But it just is such a beautiful thing. I mean, it's just so amazing that we make these little human beings and they come out. I mean, it's just, it's pretty cool.
I imagine the patient's vibe also is pretty great.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's especially great if it's someone that I've, you know, like delivered their other kids, and it's just, it's kind of cool.
Do people give you a lot of cookies and baked goods? Thank yous.
Yeah, lots of different things. I actually have gotten one of my most beautiful bouquet of flowers was from a patient who just was complaining that her discharge just didn't smell right. And it had been going on for a really long time. And I told her to stop using soap or to stop using the antibacterial soap she was using. And the smell went away. And she sent me this beautiful bouquet of flowers. It was like,
aw.
It's funny.
A discharge-based gratitude.
Exactly.
She's like, you changed my life.
Exactly.
And my fluids.
Exactly.
So no antibacterial soap.
Don't use any antibacterial soap. And don't use detergent soap in your body. And use very little soap in your body.
Really?
Soap is really not that, especially for your vulva. Don't use, if you can avoid using soap, you're better off.
What about vaginal steaming and douches?
Don't douche.
Right.
Don't. One of the vaginal specialists at Kaiser in the Bay Area had patients kind of come up with slogans for her vaginal health clinic. And one of the patients came up with a slogan, the vagina is a self-cleaning oven. And it's so true. It's like the vagina will keep its own balance if you don't mess with it. If you upset the balance, the anaerobic bacteria, which create smell, are going to overgrow. So the less, And the problem with soap is that a lot of soap has detergent qualities, so it's going to take away the oils, and the oils are one of the things that protect the skin. So if you take away oils from the skin, you're going to have more overgrowth of kind of bad bacteria as well. So the thing with the vagina is that, or with the vulva, is that a lot of over-the-counter products are irritating to the vulva. Like this product Vagisil that people use for irritation is actually really irritated to the vagina. Most vaginal specialists will say Vagisil makes you ill.
BRB, I'm going to go drop a single called Vagisil Makes You Ill.
And one of the, you know, Vaseline is probably very safe. Coconut oil is very safe. Those oils are safe, but creams and lotions tend to not be safe. They tend to dry out the vagina and the vulva. A lot of over-the-counter products have something called propylene glycol in it, which 5 to 10% of people get irritated from. Huh. It's drying. KY jelly tends to dry people out. So most of us recommend against KY. We, you know, either if you're using condoms, oils will dissolve the condom, so you don't want to use an oil or a greasy substance when you're using condoms. But as an alternative, you can use some of the silicone-based lubricants. But you don't want to get rid of the oils in the skin of the vulva and the vagina, because they're really there to protect you.
So stay hairy, stay oily.
Exactly. Stay greasy and stay hairy.
Words to live by. From the gyro-gyno.
From the gyro-gyno, exactly.
This is good advice. Thank you so much.
And bidets are a great thing.
Oh, bidets are a great thing.
We
should all have Japanese toilets, shouldn't
exactly.
we?
Exactly.
Why don't we have them?
I know, we should. They're a great thing.
Do you think the kind that are like aftermarket, like putting a spoiler on your toilet, but they're a bidet, like the kind that just hook in?
They actually work fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have bidets?
I don't.
Get a bidet! Treat yourself!
I know, I should. I have a separate shower head. That's...
Treat yourself. I tried.
I have an old house. It's a long story.
I know. I just don't understand why we have so much technology in our cars, but our toilets are just water holes.
I know.
I agree.
I know. And all these, and stay away from wipes too. That's my one other piece of advice, because a lot of those wipes are drying too.
And they also make fatbergs in the sewers. Have you heard about those?
Yeah, I saw that picture in the London sewer.
Oh, you'll never unsee it.
There's a picture of these people working on this huge, like, blob that's like obstructing the London sewer. It's like as big as an elephant.
Oh, it's the grossest thing you'll ever
picture.
Okay, Google fatberg and send me the invoice for the psychotherapy. It's worth it. I will tell you that in one photo, a London sewer worker is holding up this greasy chunk that's about the size of a small marlin. Were he a fisherman? I was horrified. I was traumatized to notice he was not wearing gloves. He was just raw dog in this fatberg. My mind raced and raced. I was like, why does he hate himself? How is his brain not capable of feeling fear? What is happening? Why? And I zoomed in on the picture, and I was very relieved to see that his rubber gloves were just the same ruddy peach color as his skin. But that was a rough 30 seconds for my psyche.
It's just like the only thing that could make I just keep thinking of like Sisyphus having to push like a fatberg up a hill. It's just the grossest thing.
Is that the term for it, a fatberg?
It's a fatberg.
Oh, it's, that's so gross.
Yeah, I know. Because it's grease and wipes just clogging it up. The grossest.
That's so gross.
This is all really good information you got.
There you go.
Thank you so much for doing this. Yeah, you're good.
Okay. So don't flush those wipes, even the flushable ones, folks. When in doubt, put it in the bin, as they say. Also, go easy on the detergent. Don't get a Brazilian wax for your next pap. Your gyno's like, no. What? No. To find out what episodes are coming up next, you can become a patron for as little as $1 a month, y'all. 25 cents an episode. And then you can submit your questions to the ologists. And I say your name and ask your question. If you want to wear an ology shirt or pin or tote or a baby onesie, I don't know how old you are, head over to ologiesmerch.com. Take a look around. To follow on social media, I'm Allie Ward with one L, or at ologies on both Instagram and Twitter. Also, if you like this podcast, if it's improved your life at all, tell a friend or a stranger or leave a review on iTunes. Spread the word. Also, double check and make sure you're subscribed so you know the minute the next episode is out. I notice that sometimes my Apple Podcast will just unsubscribe me from my favorite things. And I'm like, what? Huh? Even Ologies. I was like, you unsubscribe me from my own podcast, Apple iTunes? What? How dare you? So double check. Episodes coming up involve x-rays, the science of hair, diabetes, Darwinism. So good stuff coming down the podcast vagina for you. Meanwhile, ask smart people dumb questions because that's how they got smart in the first place. They love it. I want to say a quick thank you to Shannon Feltis and Bonnie Dutch for running ologiesmerch.com. You guys are amazing. And to Aaron Talbert and new Boston resident. How's Boston treating you, Hannah? Good? Ologites in Boston, say hi to Hannah Lippo online. She's amazing. Be her friend. Show her your dogs. And also to Stephen Ray Morris, my amazing editor for this. I could not put these out every week without you. So thank you. The theme song was written by Nick Thorburn of the band Islands. He's amazing. Now, if you stick around through the credits, you know that I tell you a secret each time is a thank you for sticking it out to the very end. And number one, I still haven't unpacked that duffel bag. I'm looking at it right now. Should I unpack it while we're on? I'm going to unpack it while you guys are on mic. Okay, let's see. Oh my God. Why am I doing this way? Okay. All right. Here's the duffel bag that's in my closet. I'm going to list out what I have. Green cardigan. There's a tote bag in here. Why? A wool sweater. Pajama bottoms. Dirty sock that has a shark on it. Jorts. T-shirt. Bikini. And a couple of washcloths, because sometimes when I go on vacation, especially if I'm sharing like an Airbnb with friends, I bring a couple washcloths to wash my face so that I don't have to use dirty hand towels on my face. Pro tip. Okay, guys, I unpacked the duffel bag. Now I just have to throw these things in the laundry. Thank you for being with me through that. Another secret I'm going to tell you really quick is another life hack. Sometimes if you see a Groupon and you didn't get the deal in time or whatever, you can call the place and be like, hey, I was just about to buy a Groupon. And they're like, don't buy the Groupon. Just come in. We'll give you that deal because Groupon takes a cut anyway. So sometimes the places like salons or gyms prefer you just pay them the Groupon rate, but don't do it through Groupon. So, okay. This is a weird secret patch. Thank you for making it through this thorny secret patch with me. Okay. Bye-bye. Pachydermatology. Mommyology. Cryptozoology. Lithology. Meteorology, oligopathology, nephology, seriology, selenology. There you go. Boom. Oh boy. Oh boy.
That's like two babies.
Hey guys, Sean Hayes here. Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sit down with not one, not two, but three presidents of the United States on our recent episode of Smartless. That's because President Biden, a returning guest, brought two of his favorite pals, former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, all joined us for unforgettable conversation. It's a historic episode of Smartless as we pry into the minds of these remarkable leaders. We'll cover everything from their time in office, America's responsibilities in the world, and their personal passions in an episode full of some candid stories, insightful perspectives, and a few surprises along the way. Whether you're a political junkie or just curious about the inner workings of the Oval Office, this episode is a must listen. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to hear from three of the most influential figures in recent American history. Follow Smartless on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Start clean with Clorox because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah. Of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well.
Ooh, yeah. That happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.